And our special guest this hour, Stephanie Seneth, doctor, PhD type, her book, Toxic Legacy. We're going to take your calls as we talk about a weed killer, glyphosate, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to take your calls this hour with Stephanie Seneth as we talk about the glyphosate. One day we got to do a show on artificial intelligence, Stephanie.
That is a topic I know something about as well.
My God, there's a chip shortage, too. Did you hear about that?
I know that. It's interesting, isn't it?
Very strange, very strange.
I think it was the cars, the electric cars that caused that, right?
That's right. How political is this glyphosate situation?
Well, I think it's quite political because, Monsanto is very good at controlling governments, certainly the United States government. I think there's been, a lot of money flowing, basically, that keeps the government from taking action. EPA, I think, is, it's just very sad how far away they are from where they need to be in terms of regulating all the toxic chemicals that we're exposed to. It's just, I'm sure they're overwhelmed because we've got so many chemicals, being new chemicals coming on the horizon every day. And the industry is very busy producing all these chemicals, and we don't really know. We don't even have a chance to study them in isolation, let alone in combination. And once you start mixing chemicals together, you get all kinds of interesting things happening. That's one of the things I want to mention about glyphosate, because it actually disrupts the liver's ability to detoxify many of the other toxic chemicals. And that's part of what's happening with the bees, because the liver enzymes that would detox the chlorpyrifos, which is the insecticide, are being disturbed, are being suppressed by glyphosate. And so the chlorpyrifos becomes much more toxic than it would otherwise be. It's called synergistic toxicity between multiple chemicals. And we're bombarded with all kinds of chemicals. Children today, they have so many conditions that they're suffering from today that they didn't have when I was a child. I didn't know anybody as a child. I didn't know anybody who had any kind of food allergies. And today, it's dangerous if you bring a peanut butter sandwich to school because somebody in your classroom probably has a peanut allergy and could die if they breathe the air around your peanut butter sandwich. I mean, it's just gotten kind of absurd, I think, with the number of people who have food allergies and asthma and eczema and ADHD. I mean, that's a huge one, like 12% or something of the kids have ADHD. And then, of course, autism, which is now 1 in 54, and that's in many more boys than girls, so there's a fourfold increased risk to autism if you're a boy. Very scary numbers. We have a tremendous burden on our society with all these sick kids. And our government, is fine with it. I don't understand why they aren't panicked about this situation, because our children are our future. And they don't seem to care. And it just really infuriates me that the government's not concerned about maybe this is the chemical or one of the chemicals that's causing a lot of these problems. And if we could curtail its use, that it might actually do a great service to improve our health and really improve the health of the nation if the people.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Let's take some calls. Carl in Boston to get us started. Carl, welcome to the program.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
Hello. I forget your name.
Stephanie.
Stephanie, I'm sorry. I just had a brain moment. Anyway, I had a comment followed by two questions.
Okay.
My comment was, peptide bonds in the DNA, RNA, protein sequence have been shown to be less likely to create cancer than similarly charged peptide bonds that are entangled. And my question is, does glyphosate to have a similar action to entangled peptide bonds leading to cancer possibly? And then my next question is, can you walk by a tainted plant or vegetable and get a radiation or airborne effects to be ingested? I'll take my answers off the air.
Take that one first, Stephanie.
I don't think I know the answer to either one of those questions, actually. They're outside of my area of expertise. I mean, I don't know. You're thinking that the plant is radiating?
I'm not sure you can get radiation from a plant.
I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, I think plants are very healthy, and I think you're actually really healthy to walk in the forest. In the forest, you actually get a lot of benefit from the forest air because the forest produces healthy things that go into the air.
And what's been proven about glyphosate and cancer?
Oh, there's been a lot of evidence of glyphosate and cancer. Proof is always kind of a hard word. One thing that was shown, for example, was that glyphosate at extremely tiny doses, parts per trillion, caused breast cancer cells to proliferate, which means the tumor grew in culture. So that's just, very tiny amounts of glyphosate stimulated breast cancer growth. That was one study. Another one, a recent study, showed that glyphosate it didn't directly cause cancer, but it caused other things, other cancer-causing agents to trigger cancer more easily. So it was an enabler. And actually, glyphosate does a lot of this kind of enabling to make other chemicals more toxic than they would otherwise be. It enables aluminum toxicity, it enables chlorpyrifos, I mentioned earlier, and it enables these other cancer-causing agents. You'll get cancer faster with a lesser exposure if you're also exposed to glyphosate at the same time.
Next up, we go to Walt in Pennsylvania. Hello, Walter. Go ahead.
Hi, George. It's always great to be on with you, needless to say, buddy.
Thanks, Walter. How you been?
Pretty good, George. I told Don I'm going through sort of a trying period in my life now. Maybe I'll talk to you about it later.
All right.
Whatever. Why, George, I expected you to have Mr. Schmidt on, and his doctor is Dr. Stephanie, if I'm not mistaken.
PhD type, that's right.
Yeah. Why, you know, George, there's an old saying that when somebody's had the rough in life, you say that they had a tough row to hoe.
Yep.
George, that means that, you know, a tough row to hoe, a tough row means that you had a weedy row to hoe. Now, I think the people that are want to ban Roundup, they never were into farming. They don't know what it takes to, you know, to produce a crop. It's a lot of effort, a lot of work.
Are you defending Roundup, Walter?
Well, George, I've been using it for 40 years, and I can agree with the doctor that it's overused. I use it at about one-third the concentration, and it's not necessary to douse the plant. It is a powerful herbicide, but it has no soil activity.
Now, when you use it, do you use it, though, just in a garden, or are you a farmer type?
Well, I formerly was into farming. Now, I have a big garden. Now, George, there are no heavy metals. Years ago, I don't know if the railroad's still... douse the railroad tracks so the plants don't interfere with the railroad, cause derailments. They used to use like arsenic trioxide and things like that, and cadmium, and George, for 100 years we were burning the leaded fuel in our cars, tetraethyl lead. And I remember Rachel Carson in her famous 1950s The Silent Spring, she boohooed DDT. But, George, the positive end of DDT is that it largely eradicated malaria as a scourge of mankind by killing the malaria mosquitoes. So there's a yin and a yang to everything, George. You just can't boohoo everything. Just because something was created by man doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad. George, have you ever read the ingredients on a can of Raid?
Yeah, it's not great.
That frightens me much more than glyphosate.
But we're not spraying Raid on plants and things like that. We're not ingesting them. We're just trying to hit the bugs as they land or fly or something like that, or the ants and things like that. But Steph, let me give you the opportunity to counter what Walter says. One of the luxuries of our show is we let people talk, and that's his views.
Right. I mean, I understand that. I don't grow crops, and I don't actually know what it means to be a farmer who can't use glyphosate and how hard would it be to grow your crop without it. It's become a crux. I mean, we've gotten used to the idea that we can just control the weeds very easily by spraying this stuff. And so I think the farmers are very eager to believe that it's going to be okay. And, that's their right to do that. I think if we get enough people aware of the fact that glyphosate is causing harm, we'll get more and more people refusing to buy the crops that are exposed to glyphosate. And this will be force the hand of the farmers. They're going to have to find a way to grow the crops without it if it can be shown indisputably that it is causing all these diseases. And, of course, that's still a process, in place. We don't know for sure. I feel like there's a tremendous amount of evidence, and I support it in my book, and I have lots and lots of references showing, rats exposed to glyphosate at levels below regulatory limits causing fatty liver disease, which is an epidemic. People who have fatty liver disease have high levels of glyphosate in their urine compared to people who don't. I mean, there's a lot of studies coming out in the last few years. There's a study that shows that girls, babies born to mothers, pregnant mothers, the ones that had high levels of glyphosate in their urine during pregnancy, they produced a girl baby that had symptoms, had evidence physiologically of a testosterone exposure in utero, which ends up producing a disease called polycystic ovary syndrome.
It's
very common in girls, in women today. Very common, the most common factor in infertility in women. So that's going to cause an infertility problem in women. And glyphosate's been shown to cause infertility in sperm as well. In vitro studies, they show that it affects the sperm mobility, it affects the sperm count, you know, and mobility.
Which is dropping dramatically, isn't it?
Lots of problems with both male and female fertility. So there's going to be enough studies done eventually that enough people will be aware of those studies, and they will stop buying the food that's exposed to glyphosate. They'll stop buying it. And then the farmers are going to be stuck because they won't be able to sell their food unless they get rid of the glyphosate. That's what I'm hoping will happen.
Isn't there anything natural that can be used instead of glyphosate?
There are some natural products that people have used to kill weeds, and I think they involve like vinegar and salt and that sort of thing. And, of course, there's also robotics. I'm actually very excited about my field, you know. Robotics is where you have vision. You know, you have these robotic machines that can run on solar, and they are mobile, and they have vision, and they can actually go in and see the weeds and identify which plants are weeds, and they can kill them with hot water. I mean, there's ways that you could kill weeds with a robot that runs on solar. So, I mean, it would be, and just let that robot roam your field all day long.
That's amazing.
I think that's a tremendous solution, and it's coming. There are people who are working hard in that domain, and I'm very excited about that because that would be a great way, hopefully, to get a handle on this problem, you know?
East of the Rockies, let's go to Angel in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Welcome to the program. Hi, Angel.
Hi, George. Hi, Stephanie. You know, Stephanie, everything that you're saying, it is so totally true because I remember listening to George. I remember listening to your show maybe like 2009, 2010, but it was right when Monsanto wanted to start genetically modifying food.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that Obama was president. And I remember, okay, well, let me back it up, the FDA. Well, generally when they test things, they test them for a certain amount of days. Well, Monsanto, they didn't. They cut it short. I think it was like they tested it for like, they're supposed to, for like 180 days or something, but they only did 100 days. And I remember Obama signing an executive order that whatever happens with this genetically modified food, that they cannot be sued. Do you remember that?
Sure do.
I'm not aware of that. It may be true. I am aware that when they tested the GMO crops for safety, they grew them without glyphosate. So they had these crops that were engineered to resist glyphosate, and then they tested them to see if they were, you know, substantially equivalent to the ones that didn't have the GMO. And in that test, they didn't expose them to glyphosate, which is absolutely asinine because the whole point of the plant is to use glyphosate on it. But they left the glyphosate out, which was a very important part of what would make that plant potentially toxic.
What does glyphosate do to animals? Have we tested that?
Oh, lots and lots of things. I mean, there's a lot of references in my book. I have a whole chapter where I go through the review literature, and I talk about even some recent studies on water fleas. I mean, there's all kinds of studies on fish, and there's all kinds of studies on different studies on bees, showing that the bee microbiome gets messed up by glyphosate, and the bees actually become confused, and they lose the ability to get back to the, you know, they have the bees are in these on these trucks that they go to the farms, and they fertilize the almonds, and then they're supposed to go back home to the hive, and they get lost. They can't come back because they've been poisoned by glyphosate while they're in the field. It's been, and they'll even forget to come back as a nurse to nurse their young that are in those cones, you know, where they have the whatever it's called, the larvae, the bee larvae, aren't getting properly cared for because the bees sort of forget how to take care of them. I mean, I think glyphosate's a critical player in the bee colony collapse syndrome, which is a catastrophe.
It could be.
We depend on the bees, you know, to fertilize a lot of crops, and we're going to have to figure out how to do that robotically, too.
This could be one of the reasons why people's immune systems are so low, too.
Absolutely, absolutely the case. I mean, I certainly believe that glyphosate is messing up our immune system, and that's causing a lot of problems. And it's also causing autoimmune disease. Glyphosate causes autoimmune disease in part because it's messing up our ability to break down those proteins. When you have those foreign proteins that didn't get digested properly and they get into the circulation, the immune cells get very upset with that, and they produce antibodies. And then those antibodies can start attacking your own tissues through a process called molecular mimicry. So you can get all kinds of autoimmune disease, you know, multiple sclerosis and rheumatoid arthritis, celiac disease, autoimmune Hashimoto's thyroiditis. All of these autoimmune diseases are on the rise, you know. And why are they on the rise? Well, we don't know. Well, maybe it's glyphosate. I believe it is. And many, many other things are affecting us as well because we're doused in toxic chemicals every day in this country. I think glyphosate's a major player.
Next up, Paul in Jersey City, New Jersey. Welcome to the program. Hi, Paul.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
It's a pleasure to be able to speak with you. Dr. Stephanie, I definitely will read your book, and I love the work you're doing because I did farming as a child, my family, and we did not need to use glyphosate at all. There were plenty of natural insecticides that we were able to use. For instance, tobacco, which was steeped in ethanol.
Interesting.
Effective insecticide. But glyphosate. Now, I studied chemistry. I have a degree in chemistry, and when just looking at the structure of glyphosate alone, I can see where it would take the place of proteins in the human body or animal body, for that matter.
Great to hear that.
But also there's something else about glyphosate, which I think you have to touch on, is that it's used as a drying agent. So in other words, you can...
drying agent, that's right. Yes, thank you for saying that.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's used as a drying agent, and it's, again, not necessary. Years ago, we would just dry grain by putting it in the silos or in the barn and just let it naturally dry. Mm. This is done in order to rush it to market.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not necessary. But
yeah, that's very sad that they're doing that because that's
had to be. And I know they also bully farmers as well. They're not a good company at all, not anymore.
Right. I know many farmers, you know, have gotten. There's that whole story about that Canadian farmer who got in trouble. He got involved in a nasty lawsuit that went for decades.
With his seeds.
Years. Because of the seeds invading his property, and then they accused him of redoing the seeds because he has them naturally growing because they'd come in from his neighbor's farm. He wasn't using it at all, those seeds.
Right.
And he got accused of stealing the seeds, I guess, basically, because they were growing in his yard. They basically were weeds. He didn't want them, and then Monsanto was suing him. It was quite a mess, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court, I think, in Canada, and he ended up he won something, but it wasn't very satisfactory, as I recall. It was a movie that was made out of that. It was quite interesting.
Stephanie, give out your website, if you will.
StephanieSeneff.net.
Spell it.
STEPHANIE. SENEFF, two F's as in Frank, .net.
Okay, and we've got that linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Steph is also on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn as well. We are going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast and take final phone calls. Don't forget to subscribe to our free YouTube channel. Just type in Coast to Coast AM Official at the top of the YouTube search bar. And then there you go. And also you can follow us on TikTok, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We've got it all. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Stephanie Seneff and take final phone calls on Coast to Coast as we talk about her work, Toxic Legacy. Next hour, John Russell joins us, A Knock in the Attic, True Ghost Stories, and Other Spine-Chilling Paranormal Adventures. So get ready for that. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Stephanie Seneff with us. Stephanie, isn't there anybody in the production of glyphosate who has a conscience who says this is not good stuff?
I would have thought so. I mean, I'm actually surprised that we haven't had some kind of a whistleblower coming out of the industry because I think they must, some of them must be aware their chemical is causing a lot of damage. And it puzzles me that everybody involved in making all this glyphosate appear on our food seems to be okay with it and not questioning whether it might be causing health problems, and despite what I consider to be extremely strong evidence, both in specific experiments that are happening and in greater numbers in recent years, as well as all this evidence of the correlations with the obesity and the diabetes and the autism and the Alzheimer's. I mean, all these diseases that we're coping with today that we had in much fewer numbers in the past. And I don't understand how we get so comfortable with the idea that now there's all this, you know, all these problems that we didn't used to have. So many people that are very obese, you know, diabetes problems, even Parkinson's disease. I mean, there's just so many conditions we're coping with that are very painful and very debilitating and very expensive to treat, that, you know, our medical system is falling apart because of the tremendous cost of taking care of all these sick people. And yet, somehow, it surprises me that there's nobody in the government that's stepping up and saying, look, this is not working. We need to do something different.
Here's the other thing. You would think somebody at Bayer would say, look, we're setting aside nearly $10 billion for settlements. We got to stop something, because what's going to happen after that's depleted and the suits continue?
I know. Well, I'm hoping that they will actually stop selling the product because of the potential liability. I think that could well happen, actually. You know, because there was actually a mention, I remember reading, that they were considering not selling it to America for use, residential use, because they were saying most of the lawsuits had to do with people who were using it in residential applications. Because the farmers, you know, they're exposed to so many chemicals that you can always, very hard to prove it with them, because they'll say, well, it was the atrazine, or it was the 2,4-D, or it was one of those insecticides. I mean, you're exposed to so many chemicals that Monsanto can just say one of those other chemicals caused your problem. So it's too complex. You know, they can't really win a lawsuit. So it's really, but they're thinking, well, because these residential people are claiming that the glyphosate caused their disease and they weren't exposed to any other chemicals, it becomes pretty obvious and compelling. So they're just like, well, maybe we better not sell it to America for residential use. They're actually considering, you know, shutting down that pathway of sales because it's too risky with respect to potential lawsuits.
Let's go to Thomas.
I would love it if they did that.
In Mr. La Jolla, California. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi, George and Stephanie. Great research. I'm going to buy your book. And
thank you.
And then a question. Originally, when Monsanto patented glyphosate back in 1968, if you look at the original patent, it says that we successfully combined the two most powerful biological poisons, glycols and sulfates, into one compound, glyphosate. And in the first half of the interview tonight, you cited a book. It's called The Dose Makes the Poison. The Dose Makes the Poison by Adabani. It was published 20 years ago. And she states in this short monograph, you know, that the body can handle all sorts of poisons in low doses.
Right.
But there's a point where there's a threshold, and you cross the threshold from low poison to high poison. Think people being poisoned by arsenic. You know, you can tolerate low dosages of arsenic for a long time, but then you get a kill shot and you keel over. Or other poisons like cadmium or mercury or plutonium or whatever. And The Dose Makes the Poison argues the case that the human body or rat or whatever can tolerate low dosages, you know, at a low threshold, but at some point you reach a certain threshold and you die. And so I guess that's my question for you. At what point does the body recognize that it's been seriously poisoned?
If it does. Stephanie?
Yeah, I mean, I know, well, it's hard, right? Because it is a slow kill, glyphosate in particular, and it accumulates over time in your tissues, and it has broad effects in many different dimensions that are complex, and so you've got other things going on in your body as well, exactly what your microbiome looks like and what other chemicals you're exposed to. Very, very complicated system, and different people have different genetics that makes them vulnerable in different spaces, so somebody might get, you know, liver disease, and somebody else might get Alzheimer's, so people are getting different diseases. depending upon everything else that's going on in their body. So it's really, really complicated. It's that's one of the reasons why it's hard to stitch, is because it causes so many diseases. You know, it's not at all clear what's going on because everything is so complicated.
Let's go to Kathy in Lacey, Washington. Welcome to the program. Hi, Kath. Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Seneff. This is very interesting to me. And, you know, I buy organic food. I love organic food. It's so good for you. But I'm wondering, do these glucosates get into our organic food?
It is actually present in some organic foods. They've done a lot of testing, and in general, they find much lower levels in organic compared to non-organic, which makes sense because they're not allowed to use it as a product in their food production. But it's in the rain. I mean, there was a study, I think, in Kentucky that found something like 86% of the rain samples were contaminated with glyphosate. So you can't, you know, shut it out of your field. You could be getting it from your neighbor's farm. If you've got a neighbor's farm that's spraying it, it's not going to. You don't have a wall at the boundary to keep it out. So there are ways in which it comes in, but it's generally much, much lower levels in organic compared to non-organic foods. And also, there are certain foods that have high levels that would surprise you, and that's one thing I'd like to bring up, because people think GMO contains glyphosate. People may be aware of that, and they think if I buy non-GMO, it won't contain glyphosate, and that is not true. That is absolutely not true. And in fact, some of the highest levels of glyphosate have been found in non-GMO foods like oats and wheat and barley and chickpeas and garbanzo beans and some of the seeds. These are the foods that are sprayed right before harvest with glyphosate as a desiccant, and that was mentioned earlier in the show. And because it's sprayed right before harvest, you get a lot of glyphosate ending up in the food. So those are serious problems, and people aren't aware. They think I'm buying non-GMO. It's healthy, and that's not necessarily the case.
Let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York. Welcome, Joseph. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Stephanie. You're doing a great job explaining this stuff. My question is on the plastics. They say, for example, if you had plastics in the Middle Ages, a lot of it would still be around now.
Yes.
Does that leach?
Does it leach, you said?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, plastics are a huge problem. Maybe even up there with glyphosate. They're a huge problem. They're accumulating in the ocean. As you know, they're disturbing the fish. They're endocrine disruptors, and they stick around forever because they don't break down, which is really, really bad. I mean, it was supposed to be. It was great, right? You buy a plastic cup, and it lasts forever. It doesn't break. Tremendous, you know. It was a real boon. People got very happy to have these products, but then they sort of didn't realize if it lasts forever, that's a problem. You know, it's not a good thing. So they're actually trying to design plastics that do break down. I think that will be revolutionary technology if they can succeed in building some kind of plastic products that that do break down, will at least not accumulate forever. But, yeah, plastic's a huge problem.
Okay, Joe, thank you. I appreciate your call. Matthew in Grass Valley, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Matt, go ahead.
Great, thank you. Hey, I just wanted to mention that Caltrans in California is the second largest user of Roundup. They spray all the roadsides with it, and they just love the stuff. And so just for people walking dogs along the road edges, just be aware of that because it does transfer. My veterinarian said it was a, you know, possibility of my dog dying cancer from so many roadside walks.
That's a really good point. And I've heard about the deer having a lot of trouble with glyphosate. I think they have this condition called CKD.
But nobody studies this, Stephanie.
Yeah, and I think it could be due to the glyphosate that they're getting from the roadsides when they're eating the plants, you know, that are sprayed with glyphosate.
Before we go back to final calls, what do you recommend people do? What can we do about this?
Well, eat organic is certainly the important thing to do for your family. Buy organic food only. And luckily, certified organic is becoming very widely available. We're not finding it a problem. Most of the foods that we want to buy, we can find certified organic. So that's really great. There's been a great increase in the supply of it over time, which also, I think, reflects consumer demand. So I think it's one of the most important things you can do for yourself and for the food industry is to refuse to buy the toxic food, because if everybody does that, they'll stop growing it. If they can't sell it, they won't grow it. And that's what I'm hoping will happen, is we'll have this grassroots bottom-up solution. as far as protecting yourself from glyphosate, there are some interesting things that might work. If people are recommending fulvic acid and humic acid, which is these complex organic molecules from the soil. They're supposed to be able to bind the glyphosate and pull it out through the feces. There's also the possibility that apple cider vinegar and sauerkraut and various fermented foods like kimchi and kombucha, that the microbes in those foods have the potential ability to break glyphosate down enzymatically, which would be really fantastic if it's true. It hasn't been proven, but there are papers that show that Acetobacter, which is one of the microbes that is common in these foods, is able to. Some strains of Acetobacter are able to break down glyphosate. So I think that would be really great. If you could get some microbe growing in your gut that could metabolize glyphosate, you'd be a lot hardier with respect to getting it from your food.
Let's go to Missouri. Cheryl's with us. Welcome to the program. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Stephanie, hello. Hey, George.
Hello.
Hey. I had a grandniece, and, well, she's still around or whatever, but she could not even eat food. And it's like, it took like 3 years when she would eat food. I mean, she'd do the mama's milk, but the actual food, she couldn't eat it. And this little girl was going like freaking almost cardiac arrest kind of thing. Oh. Took 3 years. They had to put a little food bag in her stomach.
Oh, my God.
That's awful.
You're breaking up a little bit, Cheryl, but does this stuff induce heart attacks, Stephanie?
Well, that's maybe complicated to say. I think it does. It disrupts the blood circulation, and it causes fatty liver disease, and it causes high serum cholesterol. It's just a high serum LDL. That is if you have high LDL, you'll end up on a statin drug. So it sort of causes some of the conditions that are linked to heart disease. Exactly, does it actually cause heart disease? Maybe harder to prove, but I would say it is one of the conditions that's likely to be affected by glyphosate.
Indeed. Stephanie, where do people get your book, Toxic Legacy?
It's at Chelsea Green is the publisher, and I think you can buy it from the publisher website, and there's many booksellers that are offering it as well. Of course, Amazon, but other booksellers as well, including in the UK. And you can go to my website, stephaniesenef.net/book, and I have links to various booksellers where you can see. Pick the one you like and buy it from there.
Let's go to Paul in Kansas, first-time caller. Welcome to the show, Paul. Go ahead.
George, great program. Thank you so much for taking the call. Dr. Stephanie, I got a comment and then a question. Where I worked, we spray thousands of gallons of Roundup every year. And that's the diluted form, of course. You spray, I forget, it was like 50 to 1, you dilute it. We got like 51% concentrate when we got it from the supplier. So it was okay. We wear gloves and everything. We're super careful. One time I got a good drop on my jeans, on my pants. I got, uh-oh. Mm. So I, right away, we had a restroom there, so I took my pants off and washed it down really well a bunch of times, and then I washed my jeans and was super careful. But that was about a year and a half ago, and I've been fighting the rash on that leg for about a year now.
Wow.
And I went online trying to find non-Hodgkin's lymphoma symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find anything. I'm going to get your book, too. I'll be like that guy in California buying your book, doctor. And mm-hmm. so to find out more. But are rashes one of the symptoms of the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma?
I think that's a symptom of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I'm not an expert on that, but I believe that certainly he had problems with skin rashes. The guy, I met him. He was a really nice guy. Dwayne Lee Johnson. He's a wonderful guy, and he had two very nice family, and he was in Hawaii, actually. He came and gave a talk, and he was responsible for getting Hawaii to ban glyphosate on the schoolyards, which was just so awesome. But he had a lot of skin issues with his non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So I think a skin rash is probably worrisome. And I imagine glyphosate would cause a skin rash for sure if you got it on your skin. Was it the concentrated one that got on your skin? Or
yes, it was. That's like 51%.
Oh, concentrate. Oh my
God. So I just want to know, I've been trying all kind of things to try to get rid of the
sad. I'm really sorry to hear that.
Well, I don't want to give up yet, but I should probably buy your book and then find out what I can do. But unless you know something offhand, what I can try.
I'm sorry, I don't. Yeah,
well, maybe
that's
I should probably start go to the medical and get a medical case, so then we could have a big lawsuit and or something.
Yeah, you could be one of the people. You'd be a good case, right? Because you had a very clear, very strong contaminant, you know, exposure.
Yeah.
That would make a really good case. I think you ought to take them to court.
Well, thank you. Thank you, doctor.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. You could become part of the class action suit. That's what that settlement is all about, isn't it?
Yes, I think so. I think it'll be pretty straightforward to do it that way. If they do win, you'll get a chunk of change, I bet.
Stephanie, how long's the book been on the market now?
Just one day, today, July 1. It just started.
Hard to believe it's July already, isn't it? Jeez.
Yeah, I know.
Whew. It's going by fast. Steph, thanks for being on the program. Keep in touch. We'd like to use you as a resource on this topic, okay?
Wonderful. Yeah, Toxic Legacy is the name of my book, and thank you for listening, and I hope people enjoy it.
Up next, John Russell joins us, A Knock in the Attic. We're going to talk about some true ghost stories on Coast to Coast AM.